Hey Pacers fans, this is Miles Turner, and you're listening to Pacers Sound.
Right side to Stevenson, behind the back dribble, picks it up and sends a bounce pass into Sabonis, who lays it in.
Boy, that's beautiful. Oh boy.
Stevenson with some sleight of hand. And as Orlando calls a timeout, he comes over to the near sideline and is high-fiving the fans.
Hello and welcome into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan. Joining us out in Houston here on Wednesday morning is Jeremiah Johnson. And, you know, it's I think back to this last weekend, to the five-game winning streak, to how well the Pacers are playing right now. Not just that, but the environment that's been inside of Bankers Life Fieldhouse here lately. And I think back to the beginning of the season, a little bit before the season, and a writer who I respect as much as any writer out there, Zach Lowe, he projects that the Pacers are 30th in the most watchable teams on the NBA League Pass. And if you know anything about the NBA, there are 30 teams, so that would rank dead last. And, you know, everybody gets projections wrong. Everybody gets predictions wrong. I don't think any of us knew what was in store, and I don't think any of us know what's in store for the next half of the season. But I'll say here, we're 21 games in. We're just past the quarter pole. The Pacers are 12-9. And they're entertaining to watch. I think about as entertaining as some of these teams we've seen in recent years. And when they're entertaining and when they're winning, you get such a great environment inside Bankers Life Fieldhouse. And the Pacers over this last weekend going 2-1. But even in that Boston game, a really good environment, just kind of a really good vibe, I think, around here right now.
It's odd that you would start this edition of the Sideline Guys podcast with that, because Kristen Airy and I were talking about that Tuesday afternoon on our bus from the airport to the hotel. And, you know, he's frustrated. He gets a little upset, maybe even more than I do, when certain things he sees on Twitter or social media that he does not agree with. And, you know, it is difficult for somebody like Zach to put something out there, because if you're going to make a list like that every year and you make a list that people really look forward to, someone has to be 29th or 30th, and those people will be offended. But as I said to Chris, I said, you know, I'm not going to, like, hate on Zach too much, because it was a prevailing sentiment among people in that, you know, NBA media circle about the trade, and that, you know, the Pacers didn't get a good deal. And I think everyone that said the things they said would probably be willing to backtrack just a little bit. But I have a little bit of a problem with 30th, and just thinking, if you think what you were thinking in September or August even, I don't know the any way that the Hawks would have been ahead of the Pacers, right? And that's if I lived in Alaska, I would have thought that. So the Hawks, and certainly the Bulls, were a team that I did not think were very watchable, but maybe the drama that was surrounding Chicago would make them ahead of the Pacers. And the Magic also were a team that, you know, I wouldn't have put ahead of the Pacers. I understood when I remember reading that article, and I always look forward to it, but I was looking forward. I was thinking, oh, maybe the Pacers will be about 20, 21, because I kind of take that one personally as well, because it, you know, they're talking about the broadcasters also. So I was disappointed to see that, but, you know, moving forward, it has been a fun first 25% of the season. I don't know anyone that would argue with that or dispute that. It's been fun to watch on television, I think, if you were watching. It's been fun in person. It's been fun to listen to on the radio. I hope the Sideline Guys podcast has even been fun to listen to as well, because it's been a lot more enjoyable at times to record this show than last year. And it's so, you know, I think we'll probably quickly get past the point where we compare to previous seasons. But the thing that I would say is the record is probably somewhat similar maybe to this point a season ago, but over the course of a season ago, there were so many times where you thought this team had turned the corner, and then they would fall back and maybe take one step forward and two steps back. And I just don't see that happening with this team. There may be another three or four game losing streak like we saw last month, which was, you know, some good competition and some disappointing losses. But I just think that they're going to continue to take steps forward. Instead of one step forward and two steps back, it's maybe two steps forward and one step back, if that makes any sense. And I think that no matter what happens with the one-loss record, they are going to be fun to watch. They're going to be in every game. If they're down by double digits, they will fight and scrape and claw and try to come back. And so far, so good through 21 games.
You know, we haven't talked about our friends over on our Pacers subreddit quite as much this season as we did last season, but we do see all of you over there and appreciate the follows and the listens over here on the Sideline Guys podcast and on our regular broadcasts. And I go over there occasionally because I just kind of like to see the tenor of the diehard fan. And it's funny.
When you say go over there, that's not walking anywhere.
No, I'm not walking.
You're traveling through the World Wide Web. Yes, do they even use WWW anymore?
It's in front of websites, but I don't know if anybody's typed in WWW when typing something in six or 7 years. But it's one of the top posts right now is, and you know, you tend to get with fan message boards, you tend to get a lot of hyperbole, which is, I think, natural. But this is probably the case a little bit, but I think kind of talks a little bit about the fan sentiment right now toward this team. One of the top posts is, the Pacers have had better teams, but they've never been this fun. And it's upvoted to the very top of this list. On there, it's funny, two more down. Just a quick reminder that the Pacers were rated, and then in all caps, dead last in the most entertaining teams in the NBA. Ha ha. Just watching sites like this, going through Twitter, interacting with the fans, you know, it's not so much that the Pacers are 12-9 and people projected them to be like 9-12 right now. I don't think that's so much it. Look, winning is important, and I think any type of team you throw out onto the floor, if you win, fans are going to find enjoyment in that because ultimately that's the goal. But I think, you know, we like to talk about, you know, the saying, it's in 49 states, it's just basketball, this is Indiana. But I do think you have a more intelligent fan here just in general. And I think you can see, you know, when Victor Oladipo, for example, he was 11-11 from the floor, and he had that three go off the back of the rim, and then immediately he got a standing ovation. The fans knew what was happening, you know, back there on Monday night. They knew he was 11 for 11, and they knew, okay, that's your first miss. In the middle of a play, we're all going to stand up and give you an ovation. And I think you have a fan that understands, you know, look, this team in some ways still is in a rebuilding year. This team is 1 year, one season past, you know, the franchise player putting them in a really tough position. That said, I think the fan can really appreciate the way this team is playing, the style of the play, and it's amazing to me how in just one offseason, all of the things that were their greatest weaknesses have become some of their greatest strengths. Last year, the chemistry. I mean, how often were we saying, like into 20-some games, you're saying, you know, remember, a lot of moving pieces. This team is still new. They're still trying to mesh. That was a lot of our discussions on this show last year. And then, you know, we kind of got to a point off air where we were saying, you know, how long can we continue to say it's still early because we're getting into 20-some games and it's not really that early anymore? This team immediately meshes. How many times in the locker room did you hear guys say last year, you know, I'm not sure we brought the energy tonight, you know, for whatever reason we just didn't have it? And there have been nights where the Pacers didn't have it on the scoreboard, you know? They got beaten badly against Portland. They had that bad loss to the Knicks where they had, a 15-plus point lead and let that lead slip away. But I think on every night they've brought it, and energy was a problem potentially last year, and it's a strength this year. Chemistry, maybe an issue last year, a strength this year. Ball movement, and just unselfishness. Not that last year's team was selfish, but you're seeing a really unselfish group right now. It's just fascinating to me to watch how all of that here has changed. And wins and losses are ultimately what matters. But just in terms of the style of play, the 180 that has happened, you know, seemingly from last year to this year, regardless of how many wins this year's team comes up with, regardless of how many wins last year's team come up with, a lot of the weaknesses have been turned to positives.
I think that a lot of good comments there and a lot of good points. And basically, this is a team that's top five, top six in the NBA in offense. And people like to watch offense. And when was the last time that a Pacers team, you could say that? And you can go down the list. And I remember over the course of, last season, when you're doing a 30-minute pregame show, 81, 82 nights a year, you're trying to look at stats and anything that a team or a player you're covering is, you know, among the best in the NBA. And the Pacers were rarely outside of, you know, some Paul George individual categories. They were rarely near the top in any categories. And right now, at different points in the first 2 months of the season, you can look at hustle stats and deflections, or you can look at offensive rating, or you can look at three-point percentage. I mean, three-point percentage, the Pacers, number one in the NBA at one point, 20 games into a season. I mean, that's borderline shocking to me. So I think if you can go back in any time that you've enjoyed watching a team, whether it's your favorite high school team or college team, or maybe it's a baseball team, some of the best seasons are the ones maybe that you weren't expecting success and you have success. So I think that does make this season maybe more fun, more enjoyable, as the Reddit Post said, you know, most entertaining team in recent memory, Pacers team, or ever. I mean, I think it may be a little early to go with the ever.
agree. There's some hyperbole because, over there.
but how often do we say you don't really know until you've been to 20 games? And so I think you posted a question or a post on Twitter about Victor Oladipo and just, you know, at what point is it you stop saying when will there be a regression or a, you know, when will the stats kind of fall back to earth a little bit. 20 games is a long time in this league, especially when you consider the road-heavy portion of the schedule and some challenging opponents. So I will be surprised if this does not translate over 50 games, over, you know, three-fourths of the season, and have this team kind of where it is, maybe even a little better into March, and still playing the same brand of basketball. Are there concerns? Sure. An eight-man rotation in a game like you saw against Orlando that was a little bit back and forth and had some anxious moments, it's maybe questionable. It's not questionable, but it's worrisome because you need another guy to play, I think, a little bit moving forward. You're going to have more back-to-backs. You're going to have tough situations. But I think the foundation is there, and not just the foundation for this season, but the foundation for the future, because now the Pacers know they have guys that want to be there that are going to be Pacers next year and the year after, and they don't have that elephant in the room of saying what if. So they've got their cornerstone pieces. The supplementary pieces that they've kind of mixed together have worked brilliantly. They're not always going to work brilliantly. You might sign a free agent to a 1 or 2 year deal and it just doesn't work, but everything that it seems like they've done at this point has worked, and it's been fascinating to watch.
I've been interested in reading some of the replies to the Twitter question you're referencing, which is essentially, you know, now that we're past the quarter mark of the season, how many games does Victor Oladipo have to play before wait for him to come back down to earth changes to this is earth? And it's been interesting to me to see the replies. Your friend BAP, and part of the reason I'm doing a lot of these is because I forgot to ask for Twitter questions this week, so this is my way of interacting with the fans here, but your friend BAP says stretch between Christmas and All-Star break should tell us. Jared Wade says only Kyrie Irving can answer, a joke on the
yeah, I gave on that one a favorite or a like. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a couple people, David Yorin, Daryl Massey, saying this is Earth. I'm there now. Some people saying you need a season. And I don't know what the right answer is. That I meant the beginning of it, which is honest question, because we're past small sample size land. You know, you're not in six games anymore. Oladipo's playing well. We're in a fourth of the season is through. 20 games is a huge chunk that he's playing really, really well. And maybe does he keep up, you know, his mid-40s three-point percentages? The numbers would say probably no, but I think the style of play is carrying over. And I think ultimately that's going to be something that is going to hold throughout the course of an entire season. So with Oladipo, who knows what the final three quarters of the season has for him and for the Pacers, but I think just his style of attacking, he seems so confident. It seems sort of like he's had these few years to figure things out, and now this is him, you know, really saying, okay, now I've gotten the chance to be to learn my first few years. Now I've got the chance to be a leader on the floor, off the floor. And, you know, you saw him try to come back in that game against Toronto and Nate McMillan have to hold him out. He sat against Boston and you could kind of tell that sitting was not something that he really liked. And he's missed a few games throughout his career each season. And then he comes back in a big way against Orlando. And I asked Miles Turner about that after the game, you know, is there any sort of extra camaraderie when a guy like Oladipo goes against his old team and you see him playing well against his old team and able to beat his old team? And look, all those guys understand the game is a business and the sport is a business. But at the same point, if you're Victor Oladipo, you said, like, look, you picked me with pick number two. I don't think I gave you a whole lot of reason to not want to keep me. And you know, yet you sent me off to Oklahoma City, who then sent me off for another player. And so, of course, there's a chip on his shoulder. And Miles Turner said that, you know, it's great to see you know, Victor go out and play well against his old team. And that's in those guys' thoughts. It's always funny because when you talk to a player about their old team, oftentimes they'll say, oh, you know, it's just another game before. And then after it's over, if they win, win and they play well, they'll admit, yeah, you know, it meant a little bit more. But look what Oladipo did against Orlando a week and a half ago. Look what he did against Orlando on Monday. And you can tell it meant a little bit more. And I think certainly Monday night's game against Orlando and coming away 2-0 now against Orlando this season. And a lot of those Pacers are playing against, well, not that many anymore, I guess, but some of them are playing against their old coach, Frank Vogel. That Orlando game has a little bit more meaning to some people.
I think it's just amazing considering that he was questionable and ruled a game-time decision. Come to find out a little bit earlier in the day, the Pacers made their decision. I shared this story during the broadcast as I was talking with Pacers trainer Josh Corbeil, and Nate McMillan actually was the one who gave me the heads up about it, that he said he thought Victor was fine, no restrictions. The trainer saw him dunk the ball, so he must be good. And so I asked Josh about that, and he said, well, I said, were you really having doubts about whether Victor could play? And he said, yeah. I didn't want him to just be out there to be out there. I wanted him to be Victor. And that's a very, you know, a trainer sometimes I think is pressured. I don't think Josh is, but I can see in the league that trainers could be pressured by head coaches to do whatever it takes to get the star player, the important player out there, because one win in April could eventually, a game at the end of the season could cost you a playoff spot or seeding, and you need everyone you can get. So he asked Victor, he said, can you be you? And he kind of looked at him and said, yeah. And then there was he said, well, what can you do what you want to do? And there was a ball laying there. Victor just picked the ball up, went, jumped off of his right leg, dunked it, went back to Josh, set the ball down, and walked away. And Josh, without anything else being said, Josh was like, okay, I guess so. And that was Victor's way of basically deciding for Josh. You know, Josh is ultimately going to be making the final decisions, and Carl Eaton as well, in terms of whether a player can play, whether it will, you know, endanger them in any way to go out there. If that's the case, the player's not going to be out there. But you still want a player that's close to 100%, and if not, what's the point? So that was a way for Victor to pretty much answer the question and tell Josh that, yeah, I'm playing in this game. When I asked Victor after the game was over, when did you know you would play? He said, when I was sitting there in that purple suit Saturday night. So he knew all along, even though there was the quote-unquote questionable and game-time decision on the injury report. And I think that's great to see. And that's someone who, whether it was Orlando or was the fact that the Pacers lost a game, maybe Victor wishes he could have tried to help the team win. Whatever the reason was, the fact he played impressive. The way he played 11 of his first 11 to start the game, 33 minutes, which is right at his season average. I don't know, plus minus is not the be all end all, but 29 in the plus category. I mean, that shows when he was on the floor how much he meant. And really, it makes me wish that we could have seen a Pacers-Celtics game with Victor just to see what might have happened on Saturday.
Yeah, no, I agree. And to go back to one point, what we were talking about a little bit earlier, and I meant to make this point because I see this in my mentions every once in a while. I'm sure you do too. And I think it's a fair mindset or a fair question. I don't mean to dog this sort of thought that might come, you know, from a fan, which is, you know, is it a good thing right now that the Pacers are exceeding expectations? Shouldn't they have a year, you know, where they just pick real high and they really struggle? And look, there are merits to that philosophy. However, here's what I think about that. When Kevin Pritchard made the decision to trade Paul George and to not trade it for draft picks, instead to trade it for two young players, he was essentially making the choice for those players to be his draft picks just a couple years further down the line. For Victor, a few. For DeMontis, just one. So if this year's team right now was something like 5-16 or something, and in position to pick really high, you can't have one without the other. It would mean that Victor Oladipo wasn't playing as well as he is. It would mean that Domantas Sabonis isn't playing as well as he is. Miles Turner isn't playing as well as he is. And big picture, you would much, much, much rather Victor Oladipo showing like he can be at an all-star level player, who Domantas Sabonis, who you hope is in your front court for the rest of his career. You want to see him playing at a level that is much higher than a lot of people may have projected. You want to see Miles Turner continuing to take that next step. You can't have both. You can't have Turner and Oladipo and Sabonis looking like solid young pieces to your core, and then also, you know, get a high draft pick. So when Kevin Pritchard made that deal, he was essentially making Oladipo and Sabonis his draft picks. And so I would say, you know, while there is some sort of, you know, it can be enticing. You say, oh, wouldn't you like to pick in the top three? Well, hey, look at Orlando. The best players that they've drafted in the top three now play for the Pacers, or the top first round they have now are in Indiana in Oladipo and Sabonis. And would you want to see anything else than what you've seen from Oladipo and Sabonis so far? So that's my whole thought on that. It's a little bit sidetracked, but it's something I've gotten in my mentions a few times, and I think it is a valid question. I don't mean to, you know, throw aside that question as being idiotic, but I just think there's two parts to this, and you would rather be seeing the angle that we're seeing right now, which is Oladipo, Sabonis, Turner playing well.
And you're a Pacers team that look to the future in terms of roster construction, not in terms of getting a high draft pick, and that flexibility they will have this summer and maybe the summer after that is something that some teams will not have. And if you're going to entice someone to sign with a team, you can't do it off of Indianapolis and a losing situation.
Right.
You're not LA or South Beach or New York City, so you know that going into it. So if you've got a great chemistry with a bright future, with a winning culture, and the flexibility and money to pay someone that maybe, you know, searching for a good contract, then you can get that kind of person. And it really feels like, in talking to some people the last couple of days, I mean, I think people understand that maybe this team's not going to win the NBA championship this season, but they are maybe one or two pieces away from being a legitimate Eastern Conference championship contender. And that's really what you're in this business for. You're in the business to compete in the conference that you're in, and do the best you can, and to get to play in the finals and see what happens. And I'm not sure that, you know, I think I even heard Kevin Pritchard say, you know, this that wasn't necessarily the goal this season, but the goal was never to be bad and try to get a draft pick. And they got their draft picks from the 2014 for Victor and 2016 draft for Domas. I mean, those were the draft picks they got, and now right, they're ready to play.
All right, let's take a look at our pick three. There are some weeks where you and I, we sit and we ponder, what are we supposed to pick three, and we can't really think anything up, and then we end up coming up with something, of course. But this week, you kind of pitched this, and I think it was to, you know, use every hyperbole and pun in the world, a slam dunk. Lance Stephenson, top three moments from the weekend. We had three games on Friday, Saturday, and then Monday, where the Pacers were at home, and Lance Stephenson had his moments in all three games. And since it was three games, it seems to make a ton of sense to pick our top three. So I'll let you go first.
It was such a fascinating three games. And even when the schedule came out, I was looking forward to the three games, because you don't get to have that home-home back-to-back very often. To have it on Friday and Saturday of Thanksgiving weekend was fun. And then you have Toronto and Boston and Frank Vogel. I mean, even in August, this was just a three-game stretch that you were really looking forward to. But to have each game have sort of a Lance Stephenson moment has been fun. And there's no one, I don't know of anybody in the NBA that on one play can make an entire arena go from quiet to bonkers. And that is what Lance Stephenson, I think, did in each game. But I'm going to pick the one game. I'll start with maybe the more difficult one to find the Lance Stephenson moment. And it was in the locker room before the game against the Celtics. And it was Lance Stephenson's first start as a Pacer since 2014. And so, you know, to some people starting or coming off the bench, I don't think it really matters. And I think Lance is really comfortable with his role on this team right now. So I think that it wasn't a big deal. You know, what's happened up to this point is not a big deal, and then moving forward, coming off the bench isn't a big deal, but he was still fired up to start. And being the holidays, he had a lot of family in town. So he walks, I mean, I think I was standing there talking to Damian Wilkins and Thaddeus Young, and they were having a conversation about something, and I don't even necessarily remember the reason I was in there during the media access time, was to find out something. I had talked with TJ Leaf about his family being in town, and Lance comes just bouncing into the locker room, and he is just like a kid in a candy store. He's so happy. And the teammates, like, they love Lance, but I think Thad might have said, he's crazy. And he's getting ready to go back out there to do, like, warm-ups or stretches, and he was just like, I forget the word he used, but I think it was hype because that's his favorite word. But like, I'm hype. And it's like he was hype because he said he had all kinds of family in town. And it was just he was so fired up. And the way he started that game, I thought the Pacers were going to beat the Celtics the way it started. And the first quarter of the Celtics game was just like the fourth quarter of Friday night's game. And to have those two quarters sort of back-to-back, and I think if not for Friday's game, I'm not 100% sure that Nate McMillan would have started Lance, but he saw what he did, and it was only natural to have him take Victor's spot because he took Victor's spot on Friday night. So it's not necessarily a specific moment other than the way I saw Lance in the locker room before the game, and you almost had to worry, do you need to rein him in a little bit? And nope, they didn't rein him in, and he started on fire. The game did not continue the way maybe Pacers fans would have liked, but that's the moment I'll take for pick three, number one.
My pick three will go to the most recent game on Monday night against Orlando. And it's a play that at Pacers, I think, correctly described as magical. And if you remember, I think it had eight passes here. I'm watching it. Oladipo to Stevenson to Sabonis, who almost loses it, to Bogdanovich, to Corey Joseph, around back to Stevenson. And then he puts on his little array back, forth, behind the back, and hits a cutting Sabonis for the lay-in. And then the just following celebration that ensued. And, you know, the Pacers have more energetic guys this year. They have more players who show their emotions. You know, it's not a quiet team like I think I would have described last year's as. However, the one comment I remember us making at the end of the season toward Lance, I still think holds true for a lot of this year's players and this year's team, which is that Lance Stevenson does stuff to make guys react in ways they don't otherwise. You know, Sabonis isn't a shy player on the court. He will yell. He, you know, when he's frustrated with a call, he's not afraid to get animated when he feels he's right. But at the end of this play, I mean, Sabonis, when he lays this ball in on that terrific pass from Lance, I mean, Sabonis shows, he pumps his hands up into the air real high, he screams out really loud, you can see the veins popping out of his neck. I mean, there's an energy he brings, and let's see, Miles is on the bench, and he comes running out in his hoodie that he's been wearing lately, kind of moving his arms around, kind of like a windmill. He just sort of brings an energy, I think. He brings something out of guys that other players don't bring. And it's got to be, you know, at times harnessed, and at times, you know, you hear the good Lance, bad Lance is as old as he's been with the Pacers. And, you know, sometimes that emotion can be misplaced, I think. But lately, he's found ways to feed off the crowd, feed off the energy, and it's amazing. You look at his stats home and away. 11 points per game and almost 50% shooting at home, 4 points per game and about 36% shooting on the road. So he tells you, you know, we were in the locker room just on Monday night, and he's, and Lance, or I should say Victor, is in the background, and he's singing, and it's echoing throughout the shower, and Lance is laughing about his singing and talking about what he told us on a breakdown last week about how he's going to have a collaboration track with Victor in the offseason. You know, he brings all of that. And when the Pacers have found a way to harness it, and when it's at home, he's told us in our interviews, you know, he really feeds off the crowd. And that's not just players speak. Like, the numbers very specifically say that. He's playing a lot better at home than on the road. And ultimately, you want to see him playing better on the road. But what he was able to bring at home this weekend, even in that loss, even in your pick to Boston, I think his presence was felt significantly in all three of those games. So our pick three, I'll let you introduce.
Well, Pat, before we get to the third and final pick three Lance Stevenson moment from the weekend, we have to follow up on what we saw against the Magic. Not just that play that you detailed so well, but the celebration afterwards. And after the play in that timeout, Dan Burke said, let's see if you guys can back this up on that end of the floor, pointing to the defensive end of the floor. After practice Tuesday, I asked Dan for a little clarification of what he thought he saw and what he expected moving forward from not just Lance, but that play. Have a listen. You always love a little Dan Burke.
True to form with our guys, we had a couple threes, and, you know, that even gets our energy up more. And, you know, good third quarter offensively, less settling, I thought. So I thought we made them work on that end. But getting stops and run outs and getting our energy up that way was huge. And, you know, that bench cleared with, what, 8 minutes to go in the game? On a 9-point game, I've never seen that before. But But, you know, the question is, can you back that up, that kind of ceremonious, you know, idiocy that early in the game? Can you back that up with some defense and with your actions? And they did. And, you know, it was good. It was fun to watch. It was fun the last quarter and a half.
Only Dan Burke can say moment of idiocy with a smile on his face. But I could tell he and Nate McMillan both were a little concerned about the celebration that looked like on the floor the Pacers had just won the NBA championship. But it was such an amazing play. The crowd was so into the game. I don't think you can fault them. And Lance Stephenson is kind of the catalyst for the crowd, the energy, and a play like that even being possible. And they did back it up. They did finish the game. They continued to make big plays, and they got a 2-1 homestand. Our third and final pick three favorite Lance Stephenson moment from the three-game Thanksgiving homestand. And it's our joint pick, so we each have a comment on this one, but I'll let you set it up, Pat.
Yeah, it was, of course, the Raptors game. And I thought Lance did a lot of things in this game on Friday night against Toronto that he did the previous Friday night against Detroit. Against Detroit, they had to come back from a 22-point deficit. So the energy factor from Lance, I guess, was more necessary in that Detroit game because the comeback was so daunting. But nonetheless, you're down to Toronto at halftime by 10 points, and this is a team that is going to finish probably in the top three of the Eastern Conference. So this is not a scenario you want to be in. And Stephenson, a lot of his good play of stretch actually came in that third quarter when the Pacers outscored Toronto 31-20. But what was amazing is in the fourth quarter, Toronto came back and made it a three-point game, but Stephenson has this stretch where he hits a couple of threes in the fourth. He hits a three with 4:39 to go that puts the Pacers up 100-92. And then after a stop, Stephenson comes off a Turner screen and hits another one with 4:09. So in the stretch of about 20 seconds, Stephenson hits 2 3-pointers. Remember, this is a guy who's not a good three-point shooter throughout the course of his career, but in big moments, he finds a way to step up. And all of a sudden, with 4 minutes left in that game, the Pacers are up 11. A game where they were down 10 to a really good Raptors team, they're up 11. So our pick three is this culmination of what he did in the second half against Toronto to help the Pacers come back. But that little stretch right there in there was my favorite of it all.
He had 5 points at the end of the third quarter in the Toronto game, finished with 18. So he has 13 in the fourth quarter. And for the game, he's 7-for-9. But that was a game that the Toronto bench had really gotten the best of the Pacers bench in the first half. And for the game against Toronto, it really was just Sabonis and Lance in terms of bench scoring. Corey Joseph did not score. TJ Leaf did not score. But one thing I do want to say, Lance is so emotional. There, he was disappointed, not just with the way maybe he'd played for the most part through three quarters, but I think he was disappointed when Victor Oladipo checked in for him because he kind of knew, based on how things were going, you know, he was done for the night. Unless someone had fouled out or just there was an unforeseen circumstance, he was probably out of the game. So he was down a little bit. And Lance's body language, when it's good, it can be so good. When it's bad, I think it has been important. When he's been down, his teammates have been there to try to pick him up. But it is one thing I do think I'd want to try to see Lance improve on moving forward, is to not wear his emotions on his sleeve so much. But it was interesting. Victor Oladipo had checked in for him. Victor then got hurt. It looked like Victor was going to go back in. Lance was able to go in, and he just kind of bounced in. When it was his turn to go back in, it was like he had a second life. And that's kind of what he has right now with his NBA career. He has a new life with the Pacers. He had that in that game. He helped the Pacers to one of their most impressive wins of the year, because I think Toronto might be, you know, 1-2-3 in the East all season long, and I think they'll be there at the end of April. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Toronto this Friday, because the Raptors seem to not like Lance very much, but we'll get there in a couple days.
You know, this stretch of play that started with the Sunday road game at Miami, Sunday, November the 19th, the Pacers were in Miami, I was pretty worried about. Indiana at that point was 8-8, but you go to Miami where you haven't won in seemingly forever. You have Orlando, who you have played well against, but it's on a back-to-back. And then you go Toronto, Boston, home against Orlando. The next two the Pacers have coming up are at Houston, at Toronto. Those are going to be, that's maybe the toughest, I'd have to look, toughest two-game stretch of road, just a two-game road stretch of the season. But what they've done previously, I think, can help them withstand this if they're not able to overcome Houston or Toronto. Because at Miami, at Orlando on a back-to-back, then you have Toronto and Boston. again, home against Orlando. That was really the only game in there where you said, okay, this is one the Pacers should take care of business in, and importantly, they did. But Indiana right now is 4-1 on just that stretch of seven games, which I was a bit concerned about. So at worst case scenario, you finish a pretty tough stretch, 4-3, and it speaks to the importance of taking care of business at home. It speaks to the importance of, you know, winning at least one or two games on the road in that Miami and Orlando split, and they got them both. Houston and Toronto here, they're going to be tough coming up. Houston's obviously one of the top teams in the league, and we wondered a couple podcasts ago what's going to happen when Chris Paul comes back, and the answer is they've still played really, really well, maybe even better. And at Toronto is always one of the toughest places to play in the NBA. So two tough ones coming up, but I feel a little bit more comfortable just with how Indiana has played before this, that they, you know, can weather this storm even if Houston and Toronto are at the top of their games.
I would agree, and I think that this team is ready for the challenge, and it was something Nate McMillan said after the loss to the Celtics. He referenced this there being another level in the NBA, and the Pacers need to get to that level. It was something that I think I brought up with Domas after practice on Tuesday as well, and he admitted, you know, the Celtics are one of a handful of teams that are playing, you know, really elite basketball, and for as good as the Pacers are playing, it'll be fun to see them try to rise to the challenge on the road against, I mean, I remember after that Rockets game, and that's another thing that's been so, I think, fun about this season is maybe with the exception of the Pelicans' loss and the Knicks' loss, there have not been too many games where the Pacers have lost and you've kind of had that, you know, punch in the gut, demoralized kind of feeling. After the Houston game, I left the field house thinking that that was a team that could seriously challenge Golden State, and I haven't thought that all summer or even at the start of the season. I just thought Golden State wins the West without a doubt. And when I saw how Houston played without Chris Paul, I was amazed. I mean, not amazed because you know they're good, but I was just very, very impressed because last year, if you'll remember, the Pacers beat the Rockets twice, and circumstances might have helped a little bit. The Pacers in some of those matchups, I think one was the end of a road trip, and then the other was Pacers fell behind so much, I think Houston just forgot and thought that the game was over, and then they came all the way back at the Toyota Center. But they were on the second half of back-to-back at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and they just thoroughly dominated the Pacers. So I'm looking forward to seeing the progression this team has made over the last couple of weeks, and if they can rise to the occasion, you know, accept this challenge from Houston. I'm really looking forward to Wednesday night's game, and I'm also looking forward to Friday, although this has the makings of some bad blood spilling over, and I'm curious what will happen Friday against Toronto.
It's funny how Toronto has, you know, P.J. Tucker and Corey Joseph, who were kind of in the middle of what the Lance Stephenson thing was last year, and now Joseph is here, and Tucker has moved on, and yet there still seems to be some bad blood with Toronto.
Yeah, and I didn't even understand what had happened in the game against Toronto that caused DeMar DeRozan to be so upset. It looked like everyone with Toronto was upset, and they were mad at Lance Stephenson, and from what I saw, the only play in question was it at sort of at half court, maybe a hard foul from Lance to try to stop a fast break, which happens all the time in the NBA. And maybe it should have been a foul and there was not even a foul called if that's what they were upset about. But there was really no reason for like the next 3 minutes of game clock for DeMar DeRozan to just stare down Lance Stephenson the entire game. So I think they're starting to take things a little too personal in Toronto. I still want to like the Raptors just for the sole reason is they have CJ Miles on their team, and we should give a shout out to CJ.
We should, yes.
New father. He was not at that Pacers Raptors game last Friday. His wife Lauren gave birth to a daughter, so that will be fun to congratulate CJ later this week and to see him. And he's reason enough to, you know, appreciate Toronto and, you know, cheer for them maybe at nights they're not playing the Pacers, but I do think they need to back off their hatred for Lance Stephenson because it all goes back to last year and that basket that they took offense to, and now it seems like they're taking offense to everything.
It does seem like they're taking offense to everything, but I agree with you on the shout-out to CJ Miles. Congratulations to them, and I'm going to piggyback with that. Our radio studio producer, longtime producer, over 15 years, Jeff Burkett, just his wife gave birth to on a daughter, a baby girl, last Wednesday. So they are like day seven now of having child number three. So congrats to CJ. Congrats to our studio producer, Jeff Burkett, who probably won't listen to this podcast anyway, but on the off chance he does, congratulations. I guess CJ's probably not listening to this either, but at least the fans know that that we're giving shout outs to CJ and to Jeff.
Yeah. All right, Pat. Well, and what is another thing that's interesting? We often talk about schedule and circumstances in our NBA life, but it is interesting this week to have this two-game road trip, but then look at December and see, what is it, six straight at home and not another road trip until really the weekend before Christmas. I mean, so many years, all of my years on the road with the team. The week after Thanksgiving has been Circus Week at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and so that had been the perfect time to get in that one of your two, you know, usually there are two longer Western Conference road trips in every season, and there are two again this year, but normally one of those is in December, and it is weird. You know, this is a two-game trip. It's an unusual trip, Houston to Toronto, but it is a little bit refreshing and a little bit of a break from the norm, and I think it sets this team up very well with how they play at home, with how Lance Stephenson plays at home after these two games, to see the home-friendly schedule and to think that, you know, no matter what happens the next two games, you're going to get through what was a very difficult stretch above 500, and then you're going to be facing the comforts of home. So December should be a fun month.
Absolutely should. 4th, 6th, 8th, 10th, 13th, 15th, they're all at home. Pacers.com/tickets is how you can be there. And when you look at this stretch, we'll talk about this more in depth on next week's show, but Knicks and Bulls to lead things off in that home stretch. And then it's Cleveland, Denver, Oklahoma City, and Detroit. So Knicks and Bulls coming in, I think we will be looking at those two games as important ones to get the home trip started off well, because the difficulty of opponents certainly gets tougher as that homestand goes on. And just looking at the schedule, I didn't realize this, and maybe you have because you are a little bit more cognizant of the road games and when they are played since you actually travel. But after the Toronto game, when you guys come back, there's not a two-game road trip until January 14th. That's crazy. So you guys get back on December 1st from Toronto and don't go on the road for two straight games until the 14th of January, about a month and a half. There are plenty of road games in there, and in fact, it's interesting because they go home, road, home, road, home, road, home, road, home through the rest of December after that stretch of home games. But you don't have to go on the road for an extended period of time for about a month and a half once you're done with this one.
Yeah, I think my wife is either happy about it or not happy. We'll see what she thinks about being home quite a bit more. So, but in general, I think that December is fun. I think that it's a great opportunity. And I do invite the fans out to the field house because we had to, you know, there were some good crowds on Friday and Saturday, maybe a little smaller against the Magic. It's tough when you have three games in 4 days, all of them at home. Season ticket holders even. I don't know that they want to be there three straight nights or three out of four. So I'm looking forward to seeing these two games, the challenge on the road, and I'm looking forward to the home stretch as well, and a number of exciting moments that we will be able to preview and talk about on the Sideline Guys podcast coming up in December.
All right, so that game coming up on Wednesday in Houston is an 8 o'clock tip. Jeremiah will have Fox Sports Indiana coverage starting at 7:30 on Wednesday. We'll have the Kroger pregame show on the radio as well starting at 7:30 on Wednesday. And then on Friday, that's a 7:30 tip out in Toronto. So those pregame shows will begin at 7 o'clock. Any final thoughts from you out in Houston?
Special treat this week. Eddie Gill is on the road with the Pacers, and he will be joining your colleague, Mark Boyle, our colleague as well, Mark Boyle, on the radio network broadcast the game coverage, and we might borrow him for a little Pacers Live pregame on the road either Wednesday or Friday or perhaps both. So Austin Crozier normally does that for some of these road trips. This trip, Eddie Gill gets the call, and so looking forward to hearing from you on how Eddie does. I probably won't listen to the broadcast or the radio broadcast after the fact, but if you see Eddie, you'll know he's with us on the road this week, and I've enjoyed Eddie's been at every one of the home games, and we've enjoyed having him once again back for year number two. I think he's doing a great job, and look forward to seeing how he does on the radio this week.
All right, he's Jeremiah Johnson out in Houston in Indianapolis. I'm Pat Boylan. We will talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.